This is Digital Story Podcast number 744, June 23rd, 2020. Today's theme is, how much of your music are you not listening to, and how to remedy that? I'm Derek Story. If you've been digging around for old family photos, you've probably run across some vintage music as well. For sure, there are a few CDs stashed away. And depending on how old you are, there may be cassette tapes and vinyl as well. You could have replaced some of this music, but my bet is that there's more languishing there in the closet, just waiting for your headphones. Tapping that fun and valuable resource is the topic of today's podcast. So let me tell you a little bit about my latest project and how it came about. The working title is Digitizing Analog Music. And like many of you, I suppose, I've been digging around in closets and in the garage lately. In part, this has been fueled by my madness that comes with shelter in place. Also, as we know, when looking for one thing in a closet, we tend to find five other things that we weren't even searching for, and so the rabbit hole appears. On the first stratum, I unearthed a valuable CD collection. Now, because of their design and packaging, they were in darn good shape. And there was music there that I hadn't listened to in years, so that was really cool. But I kept going, I kept digging, and the next layer revealed cassette tapes. Now, here I may be dating myself. What do you mean I may be dating myself? I am dating myself. These wonderful but fragile creatures also contained tunes that suddenly I was yearning to revisit. This is when the thought occurred to me, why shouldn't we rescue our music as well? Why just reserve these efforts for pictures and slides and negatives? Music is just as important. At this very moment, my epiphany occurred and a new online workshop was born. And I might add, one that will be free to our Inner Circle members. Okay, so there's the backstory on how this all got started. Now, I've been working on this for a couple weeks because, you know, there are a lot of different moving parts to it. And I don't say that to make it sound complicated or anything. When I say a lot of moving parts, I mean my search is always to find the best practices, the easiest way to do it, the cheapest way to do it, if possible, with options for, you know, spending a little bit more money or doing it a little bit more lavishly. I like to cover the whole spectrum. So there's a lot of experimenting with all of this. Now, when it comes to CDs, as you probably know, because you've done this yourself, ripping CDs and so forth, that is a fairly straightforward endeavor. However, if you have other types of music, if you do have cassette tapes, or if you do have vinyl that you want to add to your music library, and that's the ultimate goal, right, is getting this into your music library alongside everything else that you have, then actually you need kind of a workflow, even for the CDs. And there are choices when ripping the CDs that you need to be aware of that are very helpful. And there's managing metadata. I mean, there are so many parallels compared to digitizing our family memories or photos. There's album artwork. We've got to have album artwork. And you certainly don't want to add a bunch of track 0, track 1, track 2, track 3, track 4 to your library, because that is just super annoying and nobody wants that. So there's a lot of little fine tuning here. And for instance, when you digitize a cassette tape, for example, you know, do you want just like one long continuous song? I mean, at least CD is already broken into tracks for you, but cassette tapes aren't. So there's a, you know, there's a little secret sauce for all of that. So I've been working with all of this, and I've come up with, you know, five challenges that I've overcome preparing for this project. And I'm going to share those with you right now to kind of, you know, prime your pump a bit, because what I'm hoping is that I can get you excited about this so that not only are you rescuing your family memories and all of that stuff, but also you're reclaiming music that you paid for, that you bought once already, and are perfectly and legally entitled to digitize and add to your library. That is kind of cool as well. Alrighty. So what were some of the challenges that I ran into when I, you know, I had that epiphany standing there in the cluttered closet and I go, I want to do this. I'm going to do this. And of course, that's a magic moment. That is like the first game of baseball season where everyone is going to be a winner, right? Every team's going to finish in first place. And then you get into the details of it all. Here's the first thing that I had to start working on and thinking about, which is in the end of this project, whether it's vinyl, CDs, cassette tapes, whatever, the music needs to be accessible, right? If this is going to work at all, those salvaged songs from the past need to live right alongside my current collections in my Apple Music app. And that's when you're really firing on all cylinders, okay? Because, for instance, when I first started testing this and, you know, working with it, first, especially when I started getting individual tracks from audio cassette tapes, I was very excited about that. So I would play a song for someone and say, look, listen to this. You know, this is from a cassette tape that's whatever, 20 years old, maybe older. And but I would just play an individual song. I hadn't done the next step yet where I'd integrated it into my music library. And they go, that's great. That does sound really good. Too bad you have to play each song individually. That's kind of a buzzkill, isn't it? And I'm going, no. It will be integrated. It will be integrated. We're not going to sit here and just click on individual songs. Nobody wants that. So that is definitely part of the workflow. And, you know, stepping back and looking at all the different types of music and different types of audio you have in general. Do you have lectures that you're going to bring into this? Do you have comedy tapes? Do you have, I mean, all this stuff you have to think about. And, you know, the plan has to be able to accommodate all these different things so that when you pull something up on your phone and you want to listen to one of these songs, you can find it. You have the album artwork and it's there right alongside everyone else. So in the end, job one is that this music needs to be accessible. Second, where am I going to find the hardware to play this stuff? And this was very interesting. Again, not quite as hard for CDs. There's a couple ways to go. You know, I keep older computers, you know, back to a certain age because there are certain versions of the operating system that I want to have, because every now and then you run into an app or a driver that won't run, for example, if you're running a Mac on Catalina, but it will run on High Sierra. So I want to have a computer that's running High Sierra so that I can use that driver, that app, or whatever it happens to be. So I do have some older computers, and I do have computers that have built-in, you know, CD DVD players. So that's nice. That's something for you to think about. Do you have something like that? Do you need to dig something out of the closet? You know, and do you need to kind of fire it up and, you know, make sure everything works? Do you have the power adapter for it? You know, all that kind of stuff. If it ends up that you don't have one of those, it's okay. I mean, the project can move forward because you can buy a USB disc player pretty cheap. I mean, like $35 or something like that. And then plug it into your current computer, and that will work as well. Now, my first goal is always to find something instead of having to go out and buy something new, okay? And I only say that. It's not so much because I'm cheap or on a tight budget. Okay, maybe I am on a tight budget, but anyway, that's not really the driving force. The driving force is that if I have something already that will work, and it's just a matter of me spending a few minutes looking for it, that just seems wiser than to just, you know, buy something without even looking. So I always like to see if I can repurpose stuff. Maybe that's why I run an analog camera shop. I don't know. Anyway, so that was really kind of a fun part, which is, you know, finding the hardware to play this stuff. Obviously, I'm going to cover all that stuff, you know, cassette players, digitizers, turntables that have USB connectors, all that stuff. It's fun to talk about, and I'm going to design it in a way that you can do it really on the cheap if you're willing to dig around a bit. Or if you want to, if you're jonesing to buy something kind of new and cool, there's some very new and cool stuff out there. All right, here's the third one. Do I have to be an audio engineer to make this stuff sound good? And I think that's a very legitimate question. I really do, because, you know, right away, and especially when you start researching this stuff on the web, you know, you get right away, you get people who are experts in all this, or they think they're experts, and they're talking, well, you know, you would only, you know, want to, you know, do it at, you know, this, so many kilohertz and da, da, da. And of course, if you're getting flutter on your cassette tape, you know, you need to, and they're going, you know, really kind of getting down in the weeds there. The fact of the matter is that I tested at different settings, and the more basic, easy settings sounded very good, and that you would really need some sort of quality output device, you know, really great headphones or speakers or whatever you happen to be using, to sometimes go to the extra trouble to buy more equipment to get that next level of quality. Part of it will be up to you. You know, what I recommend on this is that you try the easy way first, listen to it and see how it sounds to you. And one test that I like to do is that I like to take something that I've digitized, let's say from a cassette tape. And what I'll do is I'll play a song first, maybe even by the same artist if I have it, that I downloaded, you know, off the internet, you know, the current state-of-the-art format and all that. I'll listen to that song and then have the one that I digitized immediately follow it, because that's really a good way to tell if you're going to be a happy camper or not. If the song you digitize yourself follows one that, you know, was commercially done, and it sounds okay, you're okay with that, going from, you know, modern to one, you know, DIY, then I think you're in good shape. I really do. Then I think you're in good shape. And if that workflow was not stress for you, then you're good to go. Just keep going, right? So I don't think you have to be an audio engineer to make this stuff sound good. Really, I'm going to give you the settings. I'm going to give you the workflow. I'm going to give you all that stuff. I'll try to explain it the best that I can, the reason for me choosing those. And then you can decide if that sounds good enough for your purposes, or if you do want to do a little bit of an upgrade in one of the areas, then hopefully you'll know where to do that to get the results that you want. So you do not have to be an audio engineer. You just have to be a lover of music. Okay. Fourth one. Do I have to buy a bunch of stuff for this project? And I've been touching on this off and on. And the answer is no, you won't have to buy a bunch of stuff. But you may have to buy one or two things. Now, so far, I've done, you know, the CD segment, and I've done the audio cassette tape segment, and I haven't had to buy anything yet. But you do have to keep in mind that audio is part of my life, and that over the years I have accumulated a fair amount of things, right, that help me with this. So I'm probably not the normal person. So if I step back and look at it from a normal person's perspective, there's probably going to be a little bit that you have to buy. Now, one tip that I'll tell you right now that I'm going to recommend in the training is that I think it's better to spend, let's say, $30 and get a nice audio interface. And then, you know, then you can plug any cassette player into it. You could plug any turntable into it if you want. You could plug any, you know, whatever into it. And you can digitize using that interface, as opposed to buying, and you'll see if you start shopping around, that, you know, they have, hey, here is a cassette player that's $25 or $29 that will digitize your cassettes for you and put them on a USB stick as MP3s. And it's just like sort of this turnkey solution. I haven't bought any of those, and I'm not going to recommend them, because in the end, you could get if you can find just a cassette player somewhere, you can get an audio interface for that same amount. And then you can play with the bitrate. Maybe you want AAC files. You know, maybe you want different bitrates. Maybe you want some options. instead of just having it, you know, be one thing. And you put the cassette thing in and you play it and you put the stick in and you get what you get. I think you will have to spend a little bit of money, but not very much. And then if you want to spend more money, you can, and I'll give you the options. And I'll tell you where it gets really exciting. And this is what I'm grappling with right now myself, when it gets to vinyl. Because I'll tell you, there is a turntable made by Audio Technica. And I like their stuff anyway. I have a couple of their mics. And I have always been really satisfied with all my Audio Technica gear. They have a turntable that's really nice. And it has USB, you know, so you can use it for digitizing your vinyl. It just looks like the cat's meow. It's got great reviews, has a really nice cartridge, phono cartridge. The hardware is gorgeous. It's got a beautiful aluminum platter. You know, it goes on and on and on. I'm not gonna get myself all worked up right now about it. But it's like $179, which for what you're getting is not bad at all, really. However, do I want to spend $179 on this for something that is probably not going to be an ongoing project for me forever, but is more of, you know, kind of a, hey, I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to digitize as much vinyl as I can get my hands on. Then I'm probably going to be done with it. So, you know, that's one that I'm personally wrestling with right now. And it's a big reason why digitizing the vinyl is going to be the second installment and not in the first installment, because I'm still kind of thinking about some stuff there. I will try to work as much of this out for you as possible. You know, there are those things, like they have these old kind of like Victorola design things. They look really cool. You can put them right on your desk. It has a turntable in it. It has a cassette player in it. And it has, you know, some outputs so that, you know, you could just have this one cool thing. It has speakers built into it. Digitize all your stuff. You know, I'm a little leery, and they're affordable. I mean, they're like $65. I read the reviews on those very carefully. I read between the lines on the reviews. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to get to a place where I could actually recommend those even for the money. Still working on the whole vinyl side of it. However, I have to tell you, I'm also totally excited by it. Do you have to buy a bunch of stuff for this project? No, but you will probably have to buy a little bit. Unless you just have a lot of audio gear hanging around the house right now. And then finally, number five, and this was a biggie, especially when we got to cassette tapes and when we got to vinyl, which is this one of those projects where I have to sit there and babysit the computer? And surprisingly, no. No. And I'll tell you, one of my most exciting moments in this project to date so far was when I figured out how, and through research, on how that I could automatically have the cassette songs broken into separate files and with some metadata as well, so that I could just let the cassette tape play, and then when it got to the next song, it would create my software would create a new file. That, my friend, was a big moment. I almost broke out a bottle of beer on that one, I'm telling you. And it was afternoon too. I could have done it if I wanted to. The answer is no. However, there is some monitoring involved in this project. And you know, the way that I've been doing it so far, once I figure out, you know, a workflow for a specific task, is that I do like having a second computer. In my case, it's an older computer. It's one of those white MacBooks. You guys remember those people that use Apple? It's a white MacBook, and it does this job fine. It digitizes audio just fantastic. It's got more than enough power. Then I have that set up and as a separate, for now anyway, audio workstation. This is why I keep these old computers sometimes, as a separate audio workstation. So I'm doing my other work. I know about how long the CD is or the cassette tape is, so I set a timer on my watch. I let it do its thing, and then when the timer goes off on my watch, I go over and I say, oh yeah, there's like a minute left on the last song. I listen to it. I check the work. You know, it probably takes another couple of minutes just to make sure all the files are there. maybe spot check the audio on them, make sure they sound okay, and then set up the next one, then go back to work. So it's kind of one of those things. So it is something that is going on as part of what's happening for you that day, but you don't have to sit there at the computer and monitor it. It's like every 40 minutes, you have to check in on it, set up a new thing, and then go back to what you're doing. If you are able to have it on a separate computer, that's really cool because, you know, some days you're not going to feel like working on this. You can just be there, keep doing it. Other days you're going to feel like ripping a few CDs. So you can do that, yet still keep doing your other stuff. So it is not one of those projects that you have to sit there all the time. However, it is one that you have to monitor while you're doing it. This is going to be a two-class online workshop. And the first class will be CDs and cassette tapes. And it will be available on Wednesday, July 8th to Inner Circle members. You know, only Inner Circle members on Wednesday, July 8th. You know, if you want to participate in this, I would actually start preparing now. If you're an Inner Circle member, or if you're going to become an Inner Circle member between now and then, here's some things that I would do. First thing I'd do is, you know, go through your CD collection and choose 10 to 20 titles that you want to start with. Those of you that took Digitizing Family Memories, you'll know that I like to start with a smaller amount to get to work out the workflow, you know, to kind of make sure you got everything the way you want. You take notes along the way. You make refinements and all that. And then once you get through those first 10 to 20 CDs, if you got more, then you have a better workflow for them. So, you know, go ahead now, find those CDs. That might take you a few days right there. Pick out the 10 or 20 that you want to start with. You might want to spot listen to some of those just to make sure they're okay. And then I would either dig up an old laptop or computer that has a CD drive in it, or, you know, get one of those inexpensive USB disc players now. And I don't really have any specific one to recommend. Every one that I've ever bought has worked. I think that technology is pretty well stated right now. I'll be doing my instruction on the Mac platform for this first session using what's now called Apple Music to rip the CDs. I'll be using Audio Hijack for the cassette tapes, and I'll also show you, there's free software out there also, and I'll also show you the free software you can use. I don't like it quite as well as Audio Hijack. Audio Hijack's so darn useful anyway, but some folks may not want to spend a little bit of money for Audio Hijack, and I'll show you some free software as well. The free software, by the way, runs on both Mac and Windows. So if you're a Windows user, the cassette tape segment of the first training will still totally apply because that's, you know, going to be, you know, for that's going to be cross-platform. When we're ripping CDs, we are going to use Apple Music. And so then you would, if you're a Windows user, you would need to, the steps will be the same. You just have a different piece of software that you'll be using. Okay. On the cassette tapes, we're not going to get all the way through it on the first training. We're going to get through the digitizing part of it. And then in the second training, we're going to finish up with cassette tapes and we're going to go to vinyl. And that one will come out probably about a week and a half after that. So more in mid to late July, we'll have the second half of the training. And that will also be for Inner Circle members. And then what I'll do is then in the beginning of August, both classes as one training will be available on thenimblephotographer.com in our workshops area. That's where I have both online and physical workshops right now. So it'll be there for separate purchase along with Digitizing Family Memories and the Essential Steps to Impressive Video Conferencing as well. So it'll be there later, but Inner Circle members will be able to start working on this project July 8th. Everyone else at the beginning of August, it'll be available. I'm really having more fun with this than I thought I would. And the last thing that I want to say before I move on to the next topic is that, yes, I've replaced some of this music over the years, you know, downloaded from iTunes, bought it again, whatever. But a lot of it I haven't. And a lot of this music I haven't heard in a long time. And it is so fun to hear it. Now, I may hear one of the songs on one of these albums every now and then on the radio or whatever, or on Spotify. But I'm talking about all the other songs that you never hear on Spotify. Listening to those songs that some of them I truly love. So this has been great. And we all know how powerful music can be in terms of reminding us of moments in our life. And that part has been really, really terrific. So I'm enjoying the heck out of this. I hope that this sounds appealing to you. Inner Circle members, I hope you're excited about it. I'll give you an update before the July 8th release date. But right now, if you're going to participate, you know what to get started on. You know what to start looking for. I'm sending you into that closet, or I'm sending you out to that garage to dig some stuff up to get ready. The new donation kit for carefree shipping of found film cameras. So like I mentioned, when you're digging around in closets looking for stuff, you know, old family memories and now CDs and cassettes and vinyl, you may run across one of your old film cameras as well. And if you do, and if you want to donate it to the Digital Story, because that helps support this podcast, it's a great way to contribute, you can do that. And you can do that easily. And the reason why you can do that easily is all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on contact. We have a contact form there, and there's actually a box that you can check for donating a film camera. Let me know a little bit about what you have and send it to me. If it's something people that shop the store would like to have, and chances are very good that will be the case, I'll get your address. And I'll send you a donation kit that has the box, that has the label, has everything you need. And then all you have to do is just pack it up in the box that I send you, put the label on it, set it outside your front door, and let USPS pick it up when they come to deliver your mail. It's really easy. It's really cool. A lot of people have taken advantage of it. Thank you, everyone who's donated a camera over the last few months using our donation kit. I really appreciate it, and it's super helpful. I then take the gear, I clean it up, I make sure it works, I repair it if I can, I do all that kind of stuff. Then I get it into the film camera shop, where people who are looking to get started in analog photography, or who just love this kind of photography, then can get this gear, and then they can love it for you. You can give your photography gear a new life and help support this podcast at the same time. Again, just go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on the contact form, and then you and I will take it from there. My testing of hard drives 10 years old or more. So this was a test that I ran for my current title that's out with LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com, called Organizing and Archiving Digital Photos. I think I mentioned this title last week. I had a lot of fun with this title, and this was actually the first title that I worked on right after Shelter in Place came down. I did it here in the Santa Rosa studio. And one of the things that I wanted to find out was, okay, disk drives that haven't been spun up for at least 10 years, are they still good or not? And if they are, how many are still good? So I thought, wow, this will be a fun test. And I had a bunch of drives. I had a dozen of them, actually, that had not been spun up for a decade or more, which isn't really smart, really, but we'll get to that in a moment. This was very interesting. Of those 12 drives, now I had to find the right, you know, connector cords. I had to find computers that had, like, FireWire. I had to do all this kind of stuff in order to run this test. But once I got everything lined up and I was able to run the test, here's the way it shook out. Of the 12 drives, 5 of them had failed completely. And what was interesting is that every one of the failed drives, every one of the 5 failed drives, they were those bus-powered portables, not the bigger hard drives that required external power. And in fact, only 2 of those spun up and allowed me to read, write data. When it came to the bigger drives, I was really happy to learn the remaining 5 drives, that all of them spun up and I could copy, read, write data to all 5 of those. So I thought that was fascinating. Now, I don't know how much longer those other ones that worked would keep working if I had just left them there in the closet for another 2 years, another 3 years, another 5 years. I don't know. But with hard drives that were a decade old or longer, it was the little portables that suffered more, the bus-powered ones, and the bigger ones did much better. I think a lot of people know that what you're supposed to do is pull out your hard drives that you have in storage once a year and spin them up. You can imagine how often that doesn't happen. I mean, I don't know about you. I have a hard enough time just changing the battery in my smoke alarms once a year, let alone digging out my hard drives, finding the connectors for them, and spinning them up to make sure they still work. So, needless to say, I had not done that, but that is the best practice, okay? That is the best practice, is to spin them up once a year. They're supposed to last longer when you do that. So this is just one of the movies that was in organizing and archiving digital photos. I have that movie available if you want to watch it for free. You don't have to sign up for the course. Just go to The Digital Story. That article is there. And if you click on the graphic, it'll take you directly to the movie. And I had LinkedIn Learning unlock it so that you could actually watch it. It's a pretty fun movie. And the whole training, I think, is both useful and entertaining. And if you're thinking about this kind of stuff, I would highly recommend it, organizing and archiving digital photos on both LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com. All right, just a little bit of Virtual Camera Club business. First of all, I want to give a big shout out to our Inner Circle members. Thank you so much for both supporting this show and inspiring me to keep coming up with new things to keep this community engaged and productive and all that good stuff. All of you guys and gals, you know, you're at the very foundation of the good things that are going on here. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. Do that. You can nose around, you can look around, and you can sign up there. If you sign up for the $5 a month, the, you know, Inner Circle member level, then you will also get this new title that I'm working on. Not only will you get it for free, you will get it before everyone else does. Big shout out to those folks that keep this podcast on the air. Also want to thank our friends at Red River Paper. They are the inkjet specialists. They are the ones passionate about printing. They are the gurus of inkjet ink. They are my favorite paper company in the entire world. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And they have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story where you can buy paper, you can buy ink, you can buy envelopes, you can read reviews. You can just nose around and discover all the cool stuff that you can do with your inkjet printer. I highly recommend that you do that. There's nothing more satisfying than making a beautiful print from an image that you captured and have worked on. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this show. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the new idea. I hope you're excited about reclaiming some of your music. And I hope you'll come back and join me next week. Until then, stay safe. Bye-bye now.